This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 375, brought to you by Harbinger Wars from Valiant Comics and iFanboy listeners like you. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 375. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi.
And we're all Hi. Business. And Paul Montgomery.
Gentlemen.
No fucking around this week.
No, none of that. Feels like 375 is a milestone, but I don't.
It was, in comics, it'd be every 25, 50, and 75, they'd go make a big deal. But no, we're just going to treat it like every, you know, business as usual.
Yeah, I think that's fine. We should relaunch. At iFanboy.com, we like comic books, and that is why we write about them there, because we also read them. And every week we read a bunch of them, and then one of us has the job of picking the best one they read that week, their favorite. They write about it, put it up on the website on a Wednesday. That's called the Pick of the Week. We come here, we talk about that for about 10 minutes or so. And then we talk about the other books of the week for about 30 minutes or so. And then I'm breaking all the rules now. And then we talk about a couple of other things that strike our fancy. Before we get going, we're going to talk about what's happening in the books. And if you are at all on the comics internet, you know what happened in them already, because no one can not talk about what happens in the books, including the ads in the other books.
So, I don't even read those.
I know. It's just like there's just no way to avoid what's happening. Especially if you're in the press. And I know that sounds like, but like, I don't even bother anymore. I can't do anything about it. So there you go. If you're worried about spoilers, this is not for you.
4 o'clock on a Monday morning. I still haven't caught up, but proceed.
Connor, you had the pick. Go for it.
In a great week of books, a week where I gave out a lot of fives, really enjoyed the stack I had, really had a fun time reading. It could not be anything other than Batman Incorporated number 8. And as Josh said, spoiler warning, this is the issue where Damian Wayne, the current Robin, Robin number 5, does what most Robins tend to do. I guess not most, but some Robins, and he died.
One.
Yeah, I guess one. Whatever, but Dick Grayson.
That's like the Jean Grey joke. Just a big
Dick Grayson got shot, and then he quit. So he didn't die, but
most of them just changed their name.
Yeah, so
most of them,
or have their name changed for them,
right?
And then kept around for some unknown reason. Batman Incorporated number 8 was the death of Damian Wayne, and this was, you know, the culmination of 7 years of stories from Grant Morrison. He's been, you know, this issue 12 is the wrap up of this series, and this is his end. He's talked about it for a while. This is the end of his story, and it did begin with Damian. You know, the first story he wrote was Batman and Son, which was where they brought back the baby from the Batman Son of the Demon graphic novel, which DC disavowed for the longest time, and brought in this new snot nosed little kid who was Batman's son, raised by Talia and Ra's al Ghul, and raised among the League of Assassins, raised to kill. And it's been 7 years of ups and downs with Damian, but this issue particularly I thought was very well done. It was very emotional. I thought he went out well. Damian's a complex character, and I wrote the review in that super long paragraph in the beginning, my feelings on Damian have gone up and down over the years, and I hated him at first. I liked him by the middle. By the end, I kind of felt like he was unnecessary and boring and kind of didn't need to be there anymore. So his death, I wasn't really upset by it, but I did feel it in this issue because Morrison really understands his character, and he understands that he is a little boy who, amongst everything else he is, he's a little boy kind of scared and kind of trying to win the love of his dad, and he has more of his dad in him than he has Talia, his mother. And in this issue, despite being told to sit on the sidelines because all hell's breaking loose, he rushes in, saves the day, saves Nightwing, saves Red Robin, and goes out like a hero. And I thought, you know, if someone's going to write the end of Damian Wayne, and whether or not this is the actual end, we'll find out, but we only can take issue by issue. If someone's going to write the end of Damian Wayne, it should have been Grant Morrison, because he really got him the best, and he was really only good for the most part under Morrison. There was one or two other times that he was all right, but I love this issue. So
I thought you actually broke it down for me fairly well, you know, when he worked, when he didn't. And I was like, yeah, those are all true. But I find that when he did work, I actually really did like him a lot. And I thought
We loved him a few years ago during the Morrison Quietly, you know, stuff.
During that era, and specifically during I actually really liked him during Scott Snyder's first run on Detective, which is you know, if you were to ask me, I like that a lot more than the sort of run on Batman now that everybody's talking about. And I think that what was a really nice nod to that in this book was that one page where, you know, Damian was like, you were always my favorite partner. And it's sort of that grudging, like when a little kid says something that's way older than them, but they still sound like a little kid. Like, because they're trying to sound, you know, adult, and they're trying to sound, you know, grown up. And that's what that reminded me of. And you know, Damian is at his best when we do remember that he's a kid. He's incredibly able kid. He's a very intelligent kid, but he's still a kid. Mm-hmm. And like just that like one little bit, I reminded myself that I really did like him. And I really like him with Dick Grayson. I think that's a lot of fun. I was glad that was touched on in here. And because of that stuff being in the first part of the issue, I think I sort of felt it at the end. I was like, I don't want this to happen.
Okay. And one of the things you, I think, really hit home is that he is a little kid. When he's getting beaten by, and he's fighting his evil clone, Talia has been cloned him a few times, and this is a fully grown version of him. He's getting beaten, you know, roundly in a fantastic page, which we'll talk about Chris Burnham in a second. In a fantastic page, you've got 20 panels of him fighting this guy, and he gets smashed head first into a wall and beaten, and you realize, oh, shit, this is a little 10-year-old, and it's really messed up. And I think that was one of the things that made it so wrenching also.
It's really interesting because if you think about the stuff that makes people mad in comic book readingdom, everybody, there's a lot of people who are still beside themselves on the horrible, horrible things that they have done to Peter Parker.
Right.
I'm putting up air quotes right now.
Right.
Because it's all a fake story. But either way, like there's something strange about often the little kid. Like you kind of want this feeling of security, and well, the kid's there, but he'll be fine because it's a comic book, and that's the kind of sort of characters that they protect. It's a little strange for me, I think, that they're gonna kill a kid. But it was strange to introduce him in the first place, if you're gonna think about it in that way.
Right. I think for the first time reading Damian, I tried reading this book with a child's voice in my head for the character. I don't necessarily prescribe audio to, you know, like
you don't act it out
actual
in your room
voice.
Every
I don't.
Week.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, with a cardboard tube and jumping around on my mattress. But no. But this time I actually tried to think of him as a kid. He's 10.
Yeah.
Is that okay? And I tried to think of it that way, and I think that made the build up, and especially the moment that you guys mentioned. I don't believe it's a panel of the week. Where he is talking to Dick, that also felt to me like it was poignant in terms of the narrative, but it also struck me as a little bit fourth wall breaking. Maybe Morrison talking about how he enjoyed those times of using Dick as Batman and those two together before, you know, editorial came in and we said, we got to bring Bruce Wayne back. So I thought that was kind of interesting, like just as commentary on his own run, and those being that sort of being the golden era of this run. And it's amazing when you think about it. You mentioned 7 years. That's so much mythology built up. I mean, it's Bat-Cow and all the stuff that Talia has been involved with. And so I really enjoyed the build up to this. I don't know, the death felt like it. I mean, even though we have that page of the 20 action beats, which was amazingly drawn and sort of like a Tom and Jerry cartoon, like how hyperbolic it is.
Right.
Where he's got like darts sticking out of him and stuff and just beaten and bloody, both of them. And he's on fire at some point. You know, but I felt like the death itself is very quick and the issue was over before I knew it. And so I'm actually really excited to see the next issue and to see the fallout.
Well, here's the thing. If this story worked as comic books are supposed to work, meaning you picked up the issue and you're like, oh, this is an issue of a comic book with, and I know these characters and I'm going to read this.
That's what I say every time out loud.
Right. But if it worked that way and you were to read it that way, then that suddenness of the ending would have come as a surprise. It would have come as a jolt, and it was written in that way, I think. But
as often death is, yeah.
Right, but because of the way that the fan culture media, you know, we have to take our own responsibility for that too. But because of the way that that works, you as a reader, we're all just waiting to see how they do it.
Yeah.
Like, can you?
No,
imagine,
you're absolutely right.
Like, it's like, can you just? I often read comics and I just think, boy, this would be a lot more fun if I was just reading it, you know, and I didn't know what was.
If I knew it in order, you know, if I knew it sequence and not knowing the
and end even first. And we work on this, so it's fine. We don't get that
but it's,
the same
but
experience.
It's,
but anybody else probably is going through the same thing too. Like everybody gets spoiled by this.
It's a 3 month cycle of previews and solicitations that ruins
everything.
The
thing is, though, they didn't release this. This wasn't news until like 2 days before it started.
Right.
So the question about that is, and this will be a little businessy, I suppose, who benefits? Because
the
retailers
stores.
Didn't know, but the retailers didn't know.
Yeah, but they also sold out a book they probably wouldn't normally sell out of.
Yes, but they didn't know to order more of them anyway. So the benefit was minor.
Well, minor is a relative term for however many. I mean, the store I shop at orders tons of stuff, and they sold out by 9:30. By 11:30.
My shop said that this is the lowest selling bat title they have, and I was like, really? They're like, yeah. I was like, more than
it's not in continuity. It's not, you know what I mean? It's even though it is, people don't consider it to be, so they don't buy it.
It's ridiculous.
Anyway, Chris Burnham has been the story of this whole series. I thought this issue particularly, he did really well. I keep looking at the little bit of business from that page we keep talking about with Damien and Dick, where casually throws the smoke bombs over his shoulder as he's talking to him, which I didn't even notice the first time.
I noticed
through.
That. That was really nice. I liked that a lot.
And then going back to the quietly, you know, and he's talked about a lot about quietly as an influence, and I saw, you know, Tom and Morrison Khan talking about quietly as an influence, and going back to that, you know, using the sound effects as part of the art and the big boom with the explosion and the biff bam pow sock oof blap whap, you know, and I love that sequence where they go into the smokes. And they come out, the bodies come flying out of it. We never actually see the fight. I love that sequence. Just wonderful. The 20-page panel, the wrenching bit where Damien is finally stabbed with the sword and it shatters all the other panels around him. And then, you know, the call, not so much the callback, because it's not much else you can do holding a dead body, but the you know, Batman holding another dead Robin in his hands. Everything about this just looked wonderful. I even didn't mind the fill-in artist who, even though he was quite apparent, I really thought he did some good things too.
That was a weird thing. I assume they're, you know, trying to hit their deadline or whatever.
Yeah, he's consistently had a guy doing 2 or 3 pages per issue.
Yeah.
So he did this segment with Red Robin. But anyway, I thought Burnham is, you know, when this series ends in 4 issues, he's a major player now. He needs to be on a major book.
It's really interesting that sort of from the first moment that we saw him, I think, you know, way back on, was it Officer Down? Is that the right?
I don't remember if that was the first time he did that book. I don't know if that was the first time I saw him.
That Joe Casey book. Wait, that's not the name. Is that the name?
Yes, Officer Down. Yes.
So many puns and names now that I've now lost track of all of them. But right away from that first time I saw his puns, I was like, I like this a lot. But at the time, I thought, well, this will just be a guy that I like, and we probably won't see him that often. And it's really interesting to me to see where he ended up.
Yeah.
In a good way. I think it's really cool that this is sort of the stage that he got. You know, that's the thing over the. I've actually gotten less interested in this series, but as I've gone through it, the thing that's kept me on this is I just keep liking to see what Burnham does every time. And I think on this one you can see he went all out, you know, and he did his whole thing. And also Nathan Fairbairn on colors, I thought did a really nice job on this one.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a great looking book. And so we're down a Robin. We could be down one or two more, as far as I'm concerned. So let's get going until we return to the rightful place of having Dick Grayson be the sidekick.
That's fine. This story's fine or whatever, but I do not want to read 6 months or another year of Batman being depressed.
That's what my only concern is, and I wrote this in a review, how this is going to cripple the character, because losing Robin, a character, is one thing, losing a sidekick, losing a ward, but losing your son is a whole other thing, and I don't know how that's going to negatively affect the character.
They're either
going
to have to ignore it to a certain extent, or we're just gonna have to wallow in it for.
But they're not, because if you look, they released all the covers for the upcoming issues. They're all about him books.
I really feel like I've done this before. Like we did it.
You've never done it with him losing a son. That's a whole other issue.
We did it with Jason Todd, and we've done it.
But that's not the same extent
with others, and we've done it with.
And also, Jason Todd was 1988.
Yeah, we did it with.
And that was a long time ago.
We did it with Barbara Gordon to an extent. Like, it's just his guilt thing. And it's like, it's very circuitous. And they keep adding more elements to make it more so. But I don't want to read those stories. I'm not interested in that.
Well, you won't have to. Another book I love is Uncanny Avengers number 4, Remender Cassidy. This book has been coming out sporadically. Cassidy's art's been inconsistent. But I just love the way the story is told.
It's a book from the 70s, man.
It's a third-person narration that you don't get ever anymore. It's just bombastic. It does a great job of telling the story in a modern way, but also telling you who everyone is and what their powers are, which is something every comic needs to do. And
I went back and read all four of these together today, and it's interesting because that narration just comes in issue 3, right? And so It's a little bit jarring that it comes in at the middle of the storyline. And I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I think if anyone can do it, I think Remender is good enough with prose that he can do it and we know what it is. And it doesn't seem like purple hackery. It's like you can see what he's doing.
He's real good with a hellscape.
Yeah,
that's what I've been really like. Most of his books that like he does a lot of books where it's the world like completely gone upside down, all sorts, and he's done it in a ton of them.
And it's in a market where there's so many stories that are dystopias, this is one that I felt was really affecting. I was like, man, the world sucks. the Red Skull brings up some really. Insightful, if misguided points, but there's a bit of truth in what he's saying, and that makes it all the harder for Captain America to deal with it, and for us as readers to be like, this is not a good feeling. But then when you get that triumphant moment where Cap, punches him out. And they do stand up to him. That feels really good. So, other than there was a nice emotional.
He drops like a moment later. They drop into the puddle, and it's the most frustrating thing on earth.
Oh God, yeah.
I really one of the things I liked about this is that Xavier's power to me has always been like one of the big atom bombs of the Marvel universe. Like it's one of the things where you always have to think, well, at least that guy was a pretty good guy, notwithstanding his jerkness.
Well, he was a jerk, as well established.
Right. No, and I know that, but
he could have very easily taken over the world,
right.
But he wasn't Magneto. That was always the difference.
And that's the thing, though. So now you've taken this massive power and you put it in. I think arguably the baddest character, bad in the evil way, the most evil character that they have in the Marvel universe, and as we've seen, it fairly well. It's pretty terrifying now. Except for that last page, because I don't even know what Onslaught is. I just know it's a thing.
That was the 90s.
I didn't read comics, and I was like, oh, God, no. All right.
I think he's embracing that
sort of the toughness
of the Marvel universe and turning it around and making it into something good. I mean, I didn't read those Onslaught stories either, and I don't. But I have faith that Remender is using it those elements to make something interesting and modern.
He's done it before, obviously, but it's one of those like whenever they do that on the last page with me, I'm like, oh, this isn't for me. This is for them. And I always kind of feel like, oh, all right, that's fine. It's for the other readers.
Or it's for me.
Yeah, but what it is, it's a tie-off and nostalgic payoff into a thing that I don't have any nostalgia
for. But I'm not nostalgic for it. I just know that it's going to be fun. Right, you know, but, I don't get mired in that. Just, you know, it doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Final page reveal is supposed to tell you something, and if it doesn't mean anything to you, then it doesn't work.
It just tells me that something bad's coming.
Yeah. It means enough for me. Like, I know tangentially.
You don't need to know the history of Onslaught to know that some shit's coming down. I mean, you just know that something bad's coming.
Then show the shit's coming down. Instead, it's the thing, we show this character and we say a keyword and it makes fans go, ooh, and that's fine, but I'm not.
But it doesn't, though. That's the point we're pulling our
hands. I think there are different levels for different people reading it. So I think it works.
I think you bring a lot of baggage to it.
Sure.
The Rocketeer Hollywood Horror number one. I was a little leery of it. I loved the first miniseries so much, the Wade Samney one. Language is good. Obviously, Jay Bone is good. You know, he does a very cartoony style. I was into it, but then when Nick and Noah Charles showed up, I was all in.
Of course. I mean, this kind of, for us, kind of a great milieu. Like, I love old Hollywood stuff. Like, it's like you can hear that patter to it.
Yep.
And Language is great for that. And it's almost vaudeville. It's not that. It's you're gonna be in pictures. It's like that. And to have a character named Dahlia is, you know, so that like immediately the eyebrow goes up. And the only thing with this is I felt like there was a slight disconnect between writer and artist in terms of cartooning. Like I kind of wish that this was just Language himself because he is an accomplished cartoonist. Mm-hmm. As much as I love you know, Jay Bone and how perfect he is for this atmosphere, this whole old Hollywood thing. There was some rhythm that were just kind of, the rhythm was off a little bit. But otherwise I thought that this was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this a lot.
I like how Betty traipses around in her underwear with a roommate there.
Well, isn't that what ladies do?
I assume that's what I would do.
Punisher Warzone number 5. What is Carmine the Giandomoncini doing next, and when can I buy it?
I want to read Greg Rucka Wright's Lady Punisher book.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah,
we will never read.
No, we will never, ever, ever, never read it. And it's fine. It's probably better that way. But I will tell you, he got me at the end. I was like, oh, now see, that was an ending page that made me really happy. And even though I know it's never going to happen, I was like, yeah.
I mean, instantaneous fist bump, but then after that, it's like, it's not going to happen.
No, see, I liked the ending, and then the last page was just like the button on top of it. Like I was down.
Last page is very much like the end of The Wire with the new you know, the new kids taking over for
without the horrible sadness of Dookie. I can't talk about it.
What I'm saying is it was the button on the series, not so much a cliffhanger, because there was
Michael taking over for Omar.
Right. There's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
It was the button, and it was great. I think that if you read this whole run, which I encourage everyone to do, is go back and get the trades or the issues or whatever, read Punisher from the beginning, then read Punisher Warzone. This was a fantastic story, and I was thinking about it as I was reading it, I love this version of the Punisher. It's a different version of the Punisher than Ennis and Aaron did, which is also great. But the thing is, this is almost a different character, and I might like this version a little bit more than the Ennis Aaron version.
I like this version that he's sort of he's like a form of chaos, like a controlled chaos. Like he's like no one's going to control him, but he's got his own control. Whereas like a Joker is sort of the random chaos, but you know, he's not working with anybody. He's got his own thing. He's going to do it, and no matter what you do, he's going to do those things. So even though they put him in that weird prison and he's got all the movies to watch, which is awesome, you're reading it.
Prison didn't sound so bad, I'll be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And I did think to myself, I'm like, oh, he's gonna get out.
Like, right.
Of course he is. Is this supposed to be continuity? I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Marvel
Punisher. It's the,
this one will never be referred to again. We'll never see the Lady Punisher again. It'll be a great little story you can read that won't really, you know, connect to anything else, and it's fine, but it was wonderful. And I love the really playing up the soldier aspect of it, which is something that Rucka really does well. And
I like that Frank brings the Avengers to his level instead of having to play on the grand, what we know is the, like the grand Avengers scale of today. Like this is kind of low rent Avengers. I love that it's like just a small core.
That's a very Rucka superhero trait, which is why his
Tony gets locked in the jam cellar or what was it?
Jam closet.
Something like that.
The jam pantry. Yeah. He's got a pantry just for jam. Yeah.
Jam pantry. And that's not just how humiliating that is.
That's new.
But it's but it's just like you could never see, you know, Hickman's Avengers being involved in anything like that. And so this was refreshing.
I also thought this is one of the few artists who made Cap's new costume look kind of cool. Like I love the way this book looks. It's got a great kinetic energy to it. Mm-hmm. You know, things are always moving or crackling with energy and great layouts. Wonderful artist. I love this guy.
It's just it was just really nice that there was a this is just an ending. It's a strong ending on a thing, and I appreciate that so much in reading superhero comics, because you just don't get them as often. Like you could stop right here. You'd be like, that was the story, full story, whether it's just the five you read or the whole thing.
Now, Paul, I'm looking forward to this. Give us the Injustice Gods Among Us update.
Injustice Gods Among Us. So this is just me enjoying the roller coaster that is Injustice Gods Among Us. This is the second print collection of they're putting them out. I guess it's like three digital comics that add up to these print versions. So caught up on this. You may recall that Superman accidentally killed Lois and his unborn child last time.
Right.
Because he thought she was Doomsday.
Yeah.
And in doing so, blew up Metropolis and everyone who lived in it.
It's another Monday for Superman.
And yet, it gets crazier. Superman killed the Joker.
Right.
Superman punches fist through the Joker. He also almost killed Hal Jordan, or it might be Kyle Rayner. It was a black-haired Green Lantern.
Let's cross our fingers that it was Kyle.
They were in a pursuit through the sky. Superman was on his way to kill the Joker. Green Lantern was like, maybe not such a good idea for you to be talking to the guy who made you accidentally kill your wife and unborn child. And Superman zapped his ring. And so he was in regular street clothes falling through the sky. Superman caught him and let him go. And then just, you know, he destroyed the ring. And killed the Joker. The second bit is Harley and Green Arrow, and they had this weird kind of flirtation together. And they went to the Arrow Cave, which I guess is
it's a thing. Yep,
that's a thing. Okay.
Oh, in the beginning, he had an Arrow Cave, an Arrow Car, a sidekick, a clone, a clown villain. I mean, he was Batman in the beginning.
I was not aware of that. But she says, well, arrows don't live in caves. Why isn't it just the Quiver? And he's like, that's actually better. That's a good idea. And so they have an interaction. Then the next one is Superman goes to Bialya, mm-hmm. one of the Arab nations of the DC world.
The last time we saw Bialya?
We've seen it recently. Or maybe that was a Teen Titans cartoon. I can't remember, but it's been
around. The other one?
Was it in Checkmate?
It was in Checkmate a lot, yeah.
Right, someone in 52.
Which, by the way, Josh, was like 5 years ago. If you're keeping track of how fast things are moving.
I'm getting a lot of that lately. I have a 3.
So he goes to the dictator of this country who is not managing this country very well, rips off his shirt in the ultimate act of humiliation, picks him up by the scruff of his neck, and takes him to the UN.
Well, I thought you were going to say by his chest hair, which is better.
He grabs him, and the guy was very concerned. He was covering himself. I guess he was very self-conscious about his nipples, and took him to have this press conference. Superman is so angry, so frustrated, that he's gripping the podium so hard that the podium is bending under his hands.
Is this the evil Superman from Superman 3?
This is, I think, where we're going. In the beginning of this series, they have a flash forward where Batman is worried because Superman has taken over the Earth, basically, and started this like totalitarian regime. And so the end of this issue is Superman telling all the world that we're going to have a ceasefire or else. And so it's you know, evil dictator Superman. Yeah.
That's awesome. I don't want you to stop reading this book. I don't want to read it myself, no, but I want you to report back every.
I just find it. I mean, that some of the dialogue is kind of cute and inventive, and but the thing that's really interesting about it is they can. It seems like they can do whatever the hell
that's
they want.
That's kind of fascinating about it, and makes me kind of intrigued. Is that is they can do anything? They could never do that story in the regular DCU.
So if you're one of the people worried about consequences in the past couple of weeks, this book has, well, within its own continuity, consequences like. The Joker
and
getting
this is super punched. It's just ongoing. It will go on forever.
I don't know. I guess they have a lot of characters to kill off.
It's
so.
Best to assume it's going to just go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is brought to you by Valiant's Harbinger Wars, which is the first family crossover beginning in Harbinger Wars number 1, a 4-issue miniseries co-written by Joshua Dysart and Dwayne Swierczynski with art by Clayton Henry and Clayton Crane. It'll be on sale April 3rd, 2013. The action continues later in April with new jumping on points in Harbinger 11 and Bloodshot number 10. These are the first issues of a new standalone 4-issue story arcs chronicling the fallout of the Valiant universe's first full-scale superhuman conflict. It's going to span 12 issues total, following the story independently in Harbinger Wars, Harbinger or Bloodshot, or you can read the whole thing to experience the complete Harbinger Wars saga.
Now, am I still the only one reading Joe Kubert Presents?
I bought
I'm
some
waiting
of them,
for a nice collection.
And I didn't read them.
I flip
through them. I looked at them, but I didn't read them.
You guys need to read this. Yeah. I mean, you guys especially.
Okay.
Don't tell me what to do, buddy.
I'm just saying. The first story is a Paul Levitz written, Joe Kubert drawn Sergeant Rock tale, with a guy and his son visiting the American graveyard in Normandy, and talking about how their grandfather attacked the beach alongside Sergeant Rock, and great tale. And then there's another. My favorite part of this series has been the USS Stevens stories by Sam Glanzman, who's been writing about his memories of being on the USS Stevens during World War II, and this one's basically the history of the fight in the Pacific going through the attack on Pearl Harbor to what they did with the boat afterwards. It's very a great economy of storytelling. He puts a lot of stuff in here, and his for a guy who's in his 90s, wonderful art, just wonderful. And then there's all kinds of things you never really know what you're going to get. And here you get a great essay from Joe Kubert about the book and about his art and about his son being in an accident, which led to the next story about a guy who rides a motorcycle, which Kubert wrote and drew. And then finally there's one of the best stories is the one he's done that's just been in pencil, Spit, about a boy on a ship, in the old time days and on a whaling ship. No inks, no colors, just rough pencils. And the Angel and the Ape story has been fun too, but... This is a comic book history.
Let me see. This all sounds spectacular. I just I'm hoping that they don't drop the ball on this and they put out a nice oversized hardcover of this. I'd like to enjoy it that way. I don't know.
There's one more issue to go. This is a 6-issue mini. So, if they don't do that, I recommend you at least leafing through it.
All right.
Guardians of the Galaxy 0.1.
Didn't do it.
Is this just me?
Okay.
Man has to draw a line, and this is where
this is the future of Marvel now. Mm-hmm. This is where it's going. We got the movie coming out soon, so I was excited. The problem with this, aside from why the hell are they doing 0.1?
Well, this if anyone ever wondered if the numbers are important, Marvel's telling you they're not.
If something is called number 0.1, it shouldn't also be $3.99. It should be like their free comic book.
It should be a tenth of that. It should be 39 cents.
Right, but
it should just be number 1.
That's probably more correct. Yes.
So marketing
make this
and
matter like a number 1
side.
Issue, but not really.
Or not even a 0 issue.
Yeah.
The other problem is this comes right on the heels of Nova number 1, and it's a very similar sort of story because this is about Peter Quill, Star-Lord, as a lad. And it's also it is fairly reminiscent of Starman, not the James Robinson Starman, but the Jeff Bridges Starman.
Ooh.
Which it's been a while, but I believe that's he comes to Earth. He's an alien.
Yes.
And he knocks up Marion Ravenwood.
Yeah. Marion,
by
yes.
the end.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
Right?
Spoilers.
Okay. It's not E.T. I've never seen E.T., so I could be mixing those
Wait
two
a minute.
Up.
Hold on.
Hold on.
All right.
Stop the show. You haven't seen
no,
E.T.?
I haven't. So I just know there was a scary E.T. plush doll in my grandmother's basement, and it scared me more than once.
But you've seen Starman.
I have seen Starman.
Starman's great.
You know what? I was actually about to let Paul off until that part. I was like, well, listen, it came out probably it was before you were born. You know, it doesn't mean the same thing to you, but you
maybe
have,
it came out on Blu-ray, and I got it on Blu-ray. Blu-ray obsessed.
You saw Starman, which
E.T. also came out on Blu-ray, so I really have no excuse. Anyways, this is and it's also a little bit. It reminded me a bit of Looper, not in terms of time travel stuff, but in terms of Emily Blunt's character from that movie, because Peter Quill's mom is the Marion Ravenwood character, and she's like gun-toting, living out on her own in the wilderness, in the country. And at the end, it's just like, you know, we get the conception, and then he has to go back into outer space, Peter Quill's dad. And then we see Peter Quill grow up. His mother gets murdered. And then at the end of it, he says, well, and that's how I ended up out here. Tony Stark, who's joining Guardians of the Galaxy. And it just very kind of rote at the end. And I just want number one.
Does anyone eat Dutch apple pie?
I don't know where we're going here.
I don't know either.
Is this on the script? What the hell?
It's a major plot point in Starman. All right. This next book, I don't know.
I've never seen Starman.
And it's a great movie, first of all.
I don't believe you, Matt, most of the time.
I've never heard of this book, and I'm scared. Because I don't like to talk about books I've never heard of.
Oh, Amala's Blade Number Zero by Steve Horton and Michael Dialinus. It's a new book from Dark Horse. There's a bit of it in Dark Horse Presents. And this is sort of a preview for the full series, which is going to be coming out in April, I believe. So this felt very much to me like an Oni book. It's seemingly all ages. It's about this girl pirate or a privateer, and she's storming this ship of these sort of steampunk guys who modify themselves with, you know, like they augment their bodies with sort of cyborg parts, but they're steampunky in a way. And it's very expressive, very, very lively story. And the hook sort of is that Amala, this spunky girl pirate, is being followed around by ghosts of all of these people from her past, like her dad as a ghost is helping her through her journey. And I got reminded in a way of my childhood watching Pirates of Dark Water, which people apparently didn't like, but I thought was awesome. I have found...
Josh, I don't know what that is.
I checked out like 10 minutes ago because we just keep referring to stuff I haven't seen.
All right. They had monkey birds, but anyway, this didn't have monkey birds. But it's like an otherworldly pirate fantasy thing, and that's sort of in my wheelhouse. And this was very fun. I thought it was all ages, but then it gets a bit bloody with some stabbings and stuff. So if you wanted to give it to your young daughter, might want to flip through it first.
Paul, this is America where we don't care how much blood a kid sees as long as they don't see boobs.
There were no boobs.
A butt's
fine. Then it's
fine.
Yeah.
I think,
but it looks like it's going to be a fun swashbuckling adventure, and it was something different, and I wanted to check that out. So, and I'm glad I did.
That's a pretty dress in Hawkeye number 8.
I love this issue. What was in the issue when the redhead shows up again and she kisses Hawkeye in the middle of his game with his ex? First of all, why is he playing cards with all of his exes? That's a recipe for disaster.
That's the thing. Is like you think, oh, it's hot. This girl showed up to kiss him, but it would have been a lot better for him if she hadn't.
Why is his current girlfriend wondering why she's dressed like that? She's just wearing a dress.
Yeah.
That's not just a dress, though. That's a
I want to know why when they're in the cab, she has her jacket on. She opens up her jacket, makes a comment about him looking at the décolletage, then puts the jacket back on.
Because
that doesn't make any sense.
She's tormenting him.
Well, she's going out in the cold. I don't know what season.
No, she had the jacket on.
Right.
Then she starts to take it off. And then she puts it back on.
Well, it's a preview.
Then don't tell him not to look. I read that sequence a bunch of times, and I was like, wait, why? Also,
here's what I liked. I liked when he punches the bouncer.
Yeah, great panel.
And there's that heart shaped window in the door, and then we see the reverse angle, so it looks like he's in a heart punching him, and you're looking through the window. So it's actually a practical thing,
that's nice.
And not just like a figurative, you know, stylized thing. Although that was this whole book is absolutely beautiful. I love the panel breakdowns and.
But at a certain point through this, I did start to wonder, Clint's not making good decisions.
But that's his character, right? I mean, he screws up.
No, I mean, not really. That's not how I've known
him. This book is.
This version of him totally is, yeah. So.
I'm fine with this being this version of Hawkeye. And,
yeah.
And I love the interaction between the two Hawkeyes where she's dropping him off in her purple beetle. It's sort of like a reveal that they've been flirting in the back of the car, and then you realize that there's another person in the scene, which is always
I actually really like Kate in this.
Yeah.
I thought at first I was like, oh, I don't want her there, and I've actually really enjoyed her in this book, and that scene in particular, I was like, oh, that's good. I want more of that. I want her to hang out more. This girl's trouble.
She's a hot redhead. That's how
things go hand in hand.
It's not like he hasn't been with the Black Widow. It's not like he doesn't know. You're saying the man learns nothing?
I'm saying it's hard to resist trouble.
I really like those throwback romance covers, though.
Yeah, they're.
I do think it's interesting she's wearing a robe with Hawkeye targets all over it, which I think that's other levels.
Why did she dress like a stripper anyway?
Because they were going to a strip club.
I know, but
it was a caper.
She was trying to blend in by sneaking into the back office, stealing the thing, and sneaking out.
Then why did they have to have him come in at the same time with her and start punching people? If that was her plan.
Because he's not caper. He's not. He doesn't do capers well. He said. He admitted to not being,
he's not good at undercover. He wears a giant H on his hood, on his little skull cap.
I know. That was bad. But it's true. Like, I was like, well, wait, why is she dressing like that? She's not.
You should have watched The Limey or something, and then he would have been better prepared for this.
I think
it doesn't matter.
It causes a distraction while she goes in the back and out again, and no one notices it because she looks like a stripper.
I guess.
Now, Paul, Nemo, Heart of Ice, the latest Alan Moore, Kevin O'Neill, League Extraordinary Gentleman book is out. I haven't read it yet, so don't spoil it for me.
Okay.
And we claim that executive privilege you see on the show.
It's the benefit of being in charge.
Okay, yeah, so we went sort of back and forth on this whether to include it, but this is 56 pages, so it's that hybrid between an issue and it's a hardcover book, but it's 56 pages.
They're,
so
they're pushing the limits of what you can call a book.
Yeah, yeah. So what I dug about this was that it's a return to that classic, the first two volumes of which were the best two. They're the most traditional. But maybe that's a good thing when it's about public domain characters. I couldn't really tell you who all of the weird scientists and characters in this chase to the Antarctic are and what they're referenced to. He's getting a little bit more obscure with them. And we don't get to know them for all that long anyway. So the real star here is the new Nemo, which is Jani Dakar, the daughter of the original Captain Nemo. And she reminds me a lot of Mina Harker. So you have a Mina Harker character like in those first two volumes. And it's about being defined by these men in their lives. So in Mina's case, it was like Dracula and all that stuff. And with this, it's the original Captain Nemo. And deciding if she wants to be this person who goes and plunders and stuff. And and then you have this whole H.P. Lovecraft thing, which I'm getting a little tired of.
Yep.
I share a birthday with H.P. Lovecraft, and ever since I've just been very tired of it. But
does that really impact your life all that often?
I just like to mention it. Well, it just comes. It's. I mean, I every you know every year on my birthday, I have to think about H.P. Lovecraft and Al Roker when we share.
He watches Entertainment Weekly and they go, "This on this day, H.P. Lovecraft was born." And he goes, "Damn it!"
Right. I guess.
And they're not mentioning mining yet. I haven't made it. Yeah. I've got to surpass the Lovecraft.
I have gotten over the use of the term Lovecraftian.
Right.
That no longer means anything. I should also note that my birthday is shared with Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And I went to Longfellow Elementary School, so we got cupcakes.
Mine is shared with Bob Kane, strangely enough.
No shit.
Also Fred Durst. So
it's too bad. It's too bad you didn't share it with Bill Finger.
Right, the creator of Batman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Batman jokes. Know. Ooh.
Those are the books that we wanted to talk about this week. I thought it was a great week of books. I really enjoyed my stack. If you go to fanboy.com/comics, you can make your pull list. You can see what's coming out every week. You can rate and review your books, and you can also choose your own pick of the week. We like to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience at the time of recording. So you can, you know, get in on the action by going to Fanboy.com/comics. And the number five most picked book was, and you're going to note the numbers on these books, but the number five was Young Avengers number 2 with 1.9% of the votes. Number 4 was Punisher Warzone number 5 with 2.3%, which I like seeing in the top 5. Makes me happy. Number 3 was Guardians of the Galaxy 0.1 with 4.8% of the votes. Number 2 was Hawkeye number 8 with 5.2%. Number 1, Batman Incorporated number 8 with 75.8% of the votes.
Boom.
So it was a close week.
Batman Incorporated number 8.
It was a close week.
I feel like we can't talk shit about modern comic creators, so why not just go all out on the old guys?
Oh God. I don't want to go into this. It hurts.
I know.
You can also at ifanboy.com/comics. You can write user reviews of your favorite books, and we'd like to run down a couple of them on the show. And Josh is going to kick it off with the first one.
Invasion Force said of FF number 4. That's the title. That is not an abbreviation. Give the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick the week percentage is 1.5%, just missing our top 5. FF number 4 is ridiculously sweet and cute, but surprisingly successful. This concept, in lesser hands than those of Matt Fraction, could have gone terribly wrong, but Fraction deftly handles both the comedy and the romance in this done-in-one story. Is this show The Little Rascals still playing in repeat somewhere on cable? If you're familiar with The Rascals concept, you will recognize the tone of this story. The Molloid children have a crush on She-Hulk, and they are determined to keep her from smooching Wyatt Wingfoot during a date. So they enlist the aid of Bentley 23. Bentley devises various evil mastermind schemes, all of which go awry.
I love this book. I think that Fraction brings the same sort of tone that he does to Hawkeye to this book. In that way, I really enjoy it. It's kind of goofy and funny, but it's also...
He's turned you around completely.
On these two books. I didn't enjoy Fantastic Four at all, and I stopped reading that.
Do you guys ever see the E! True Hollywood story on Little Rascals?
It's messed up.
They all die horribly.
Yeah, it's really
even the
messed
dog.
Up.
The dog gets poisoned. Sorry,
it's really bad. That show was cursed. But this is a fun little one shot issue. As Invasion Force said, it is you can pick it up issue 4. She-Hulk goes on a date. The Molloids all have crushes on her, so they try to break up the date. But all of their schemes end up making the date more romantic, which blows up in their face because then she smooches Wyatt Wingfoot. Spoilers. So great, and Mike Allred art. He really excels at making She-Hulk look big and brawny, but also feminine and attractive. So that's a really hard line to walk, and he does it really well. Next,
all right. Next up, G. Hostman or Ghostman writes of Aquaman number 17. Story of 5 out of 5. Art of 4 out of 5. POW percentage 1.5. Johns has taken his sweet time in building a world around Aquaman that I want to read about and spend time in and see the characters that he has populated it with. I am now fascinated by it. There are multiple storylines that give this book an epic feel and a must-read for any DCU fan. This is good stuff. This title is vintage Geoff Johns, the same Geoff Johns that gave us Green Lantern Rebirth and the incredible JSA, not the Geoff Johns that gave us the new 52 Justice League. There is now a passion in this title that was not there in the beginning. And much like the characters in this comic that once made fun of the man that could talk to fish, I was wrong about Aquaman.
It was a long review that started off in the beginning talking about how much in the beginning he didn't enjoy it and thought Aquaman was a joke, and then how it's been building and it's come around in the book. It was a really well written review. This book, I agree with him. This book is great. It's one of the books that has stayed consistently good since the beginning. I disagree with him saying in the beginning that I enjoyed it too, but when people talk about the best DC books still out there, I always put Aquaman in the top 5. It's still really fun. And they sort of focused his character now that he had gotten through the Throne of Atlantis storyline, and now he's sort of back to being protector of the seas. Really good stuff. Paul Pelletier's work is, well, not Ivan Reis level, it's still quite solid. So it's still a really fun book.
Bring back the beard and you bring back me.
I agree. The only thing I don't like is the hair, and I think he should have a bit messier hair since he lives under the water instead of a really nicely, you know, freshly cut head. But we'll see.
Is he an asshole at least?
No. I mean,
he should be an asshole. That's important.
Maybe not.
I can be an asshole.
He's a little grumpy. So go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can rate and review your books. And if you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, you can help out iFanboy by making all your purchases through us. It doesn't cost you a dime, not even a nickel, not even a penny, which they may or may not be getting rid of. It's the only thing it does is cost Amazon. So if you go there, You can you get sent to through a link to Amazon proper. You do all your shopping as you would normally, and we get a little piece of the pie, and it really helps out pay the bills, pay you know, pay the server costs, pay the people costs. We have very expensive caviar tastes at lunch, and it doesn't, you know, money doesn't grow on trees.
Give me the money.
So go to fanboy.com/comics.
Send it to me.
It is a way that you can help out without costing yourself anything, and it is very effective, and we appreciate everyone who does it.
I would like I would like the money.
Let's read a couple of emails. The first is from Adrian Z, who writes and says, with a new direction about to hit the Green Lantern corner of DC, I was wondering what each of you would like to see moving forward. What stories do you want told? What characters do you want to see more or less of? Who would you like to see given the reins of the GL books? And this was written slightly before they announced the new creative team, so we know who's coming on. But I always thought this was interesting because I used to love Green Lantern, and now I just have no interest in whatsoever.
I just don't care. It was just any bit of enthusiasm has been flogged out of me systematically.
And
I know that sounds horrible, but
it's
the fact that you're saying it too means that I'm not all that off base.
No, you're not. And the thing is, every time I think about wanting to jump back in, I see that they still keep all the books connected.
I think what got me, I was like, okay, there's a change. Let's think about it. And then I saw how many titles there were, and I was instantly turned off.
See, that didn't bother me so much as seeing they were all connected. Like if I can read a Green Lantern story and not have to worry about reading Green Lantern New Guardians or Green Lantern Corps or Red Lanterns, then that's fine. But the fact that every time they turn around, it's a new Wrath of the Green Lanterns or whatever they're called, and it's constantly a story of connecting them all. I don't want to read all those books. I don't.
It's become sort of this Power Rangers thing with the color coding, and I know that's kind of a cliche criticism to make, but that's sort of how I feel. But
the color coding was a great idea in the beginning. It was really fun in the beginning, but it's
a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it just becomes ridiculous. Like everything in the universe is dictated by these the color codings and stuff, and it just gets a little self serious. And I think Connor, you get your Green Lantern fix from the animated show.
Yeah,
right?
I love the animated show. The animated show does deal with the different lanterns, but it's very focused. It's just basically
about these characters
in space, you know, helping people, which is what I kind of want to read. And or Green Lantern on Earth helping people. I just want to read a Green Lantern superhero story. I don't want to read a sci-fi epic that goes through five titles. And that's
so. What would you do? Who would you put on it to just do, like, who would you want to write? Like, say that there's just Hal Jordan Green Lantern solo series, nothing else.
I don't think Fiakov is a bad choice for writing some Green Lantern stuff. My thing is, it's sort of not about the creative team at this point.
Yeah, it's about the concept.
It's just the concept, and I'm not a Hal Jordan fan traditionally.
I'd like to see Jeff Parker on Green Lantern.
Ooh, see that
would be fun. Thinking. Yeah,
I think that's a really good point.
I think DC needs to get Jeff Parker. He sort of languishes over at Marvel. He's not amongst that top tier, and he gets put on books that no one reads, and he's a great writer, I think.
And he's perfect for this because you have that nice alien element that you can he's got a great imagination. He can kind of go anywhere. I'm going to take that answer. That's a great answer.
Yeah. That's our official answer. We are agreed.
All right. Next.
Igor G, or Igor, I enjoyed reading... I'm sorry. How do you not do that? And how much does he hate that? I enjoyed reading Rick Remender's Agent of Fear, and after reading Captain America number 5 by Remender and Romita Jr., I was reminded of his storytelling dialogue in Outer Space Adventure very similar. What are your thoughts, and what do you guys think of Captain America battling foes in another dimension as opposed to more grounded on Earth? I like it, and I don't want to read it forever. But I think it's ballsy, and I think it was what had to happen. I think we touched on a little earlier that he's always doing post-apocalyptic kind of stuff. But the other thing that he excels at is saying, okay, let's just take all these characters and take them away from all this stuff so he doesn't have to worry about it and really throw them into the deep end.
He's also really doing stories reminiscent of the 60s Kirby's stories.
Yeah.
I mean, you could totally see – the story happening now being drawn by Kirby in 1968, you know, just that's what he's doing. And I love it.
I think it's interesting to take Captain America out of America or even out of a world where America is a symbol of something. So to make him his own hero and have to come up with, you know, a different kind of legacy. And so I think putting him in another setting is very interesting. And because we've had all these, you know, political stories and Cold War stories and everything building on the Brubaker mythology. you want to change it up a bit. If not forever, at least for some time.
It's the kind of change up that you would need in Green Lantern, for example.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Like Josh said, I don't want to see it for the next 12 issues. I'm sure he'll be back in issue 6. And I know, you know, from talking to people that I know, you know, he'll be back on Earth fighting villains and things like that. But it won't be the same book Breaker wrote. It'll be more of a superhero book than a spy book, which was good. We had a lot of years of spy books. Now let's see Cap punch somebody. Next is Ashley from the UK, who says, I've just reread Civil War and Wolverine Origin again. I intend to revert to these books every year or so. With all the new books you guys read, what are the ones you reread and read a number of times and will continue to do so, and why? That's the first question. Everybody take one.
That just makes me sad. Like, I literally, like, look around my book and I get on my room and I have books everywhere. I get a lot of them sent to me and I have a lot that I bought, and I get minor panic attacks that I don't have time to, but it's Preacher.
Paul?
That's a good answer. I've just read it recently for the first time. Infinity Gauntlet. That would be like a perennial for me.
Good answer.
Interesting. That's a good one. I could very easily say Dark Knight or Watchmen, which are the go-tos, but I was leafing through New Frontier the other day. And oh my God, that's a book I'm going to return to often. Mm-hmm. Just gorgeous.
Watchmen is another one. Watchmen is great for rereading. It gets better every time you read it.
And Dark Knight, I mean, it's a cliche, but I've read that almost every year since I was 10. So
I haven't read it in probably a couple of years.
We read it recently for those shows we did, Paul and I reread them then, and it still holds up pretty awesomely. Ashley's next question is one I've thought of. Well, what's on my mind while reading Wolverine Origins is his claws are bone, pointy like a twig or a stick. Yet once he had the adamantium laced to his bones, they are now knife or sword-like with sharp edges. Surely they should just be the same as they were, just as metal bones. It's wrecking my head. It doesn't make sense in a world where you can lace adamantium bones to a mutant. That's what I get hung up on. I know. It's true.
Yes.
You see, suddenly he had these like craggly, you know.
I assume they removed the older parts of the bone, which, by the way, should have grown back immediately. And then
they just covered it with adamantium.
But I guess maybe they put more. Sometimes you see them, they're like razor thin, and then sometimes they're like a thicker, like an axe blade kind of thing.
Is there an additional armature over the bone, between the bone and the adamantium, to make that new shape?
Are they encasing it like in a case of adamantium?
Here's what they did.
The bones are still craggly inside.
Here's what they did. They shaved down the bone and used it as a skeleton for the thinner razor thing. And what happens is, instead of growing back, it fuses with the adamantium because the adamantium is so hard that the bone can't actually go around it. So that completely self-seals it and stops them from falling off. So you have an indestructible system. And that's why they're thinner and smaller.
Also, I've always wondered, I mean, when he first started off, they were super small claws. They came out of the top of his hands. Mm-hmm. But now they have them coming out of his forearms, and they're long. His
forearms.
Yeah, that's where we see those drawings, the old Marvel Universe, like, you know, character profiles, they would retract into his forearms. Mm-hmm. So the question is, does his hand have to stay straight when they retract? When they come out?
When they're going in and out, yes.
Otherwise, they're going to burst out of his wrist.
When they're all the way in or out, he's good to move. But during the actual action of retraction, he has to be at a straight angle.
So it's tough.
Well, there's a whole lot that's hard about being Wolverine.
It's true. He can't really get drunk, can he?
He gives it his level best, though. I mean, that guy loves beer.
You can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. We'll take them all. We're going to skip the voicemails this week, but you can call us at 888-FANBOY, 326-2697 with any questions. Keep it to about 30 seconds and tell us your name and where you're from, and then that'll be very helpful. And we have other shows, not just the Big League podcast. Josh is going to tell you about his show.
The Make Comics podcast, which we moved to Mondays because we had to fill in some
space. Feels right there.
It does. It's nice there. That's me and Andy Schmidt, former Marvel and IDW editor, and now of Comic Experience, the comic book education school, which I don't believe is the term he uses. Him and I will pick an aspect of making comics and talk about that for 10 or 15 minutes, a sort of a short show for aspiring creators. And we try to do all aspects of the creation of comics, from the actual creation of comics to the business around it to, you know, the kind of things that you should do to try to be successful in your career.
Do you get to the crushing depression and or medical problems from not having health insurance?
It's almost impossible to avoid. I mean, there's rarely, like, we'll start off and be like, tell me about panel transitions and what the optimum number of panels on a page is. And then by the end, it's what do I do about this need for an X-ray?
What about anemia from not getting any iron in your diet?
I consider that's just sort of a baseline, though.
Right.
Like that's to be expected. And if people don't know that, you shouldn't get into this.
Right. True.
Paul, you know what I'm talking about.
Also, the splodes are back. Let's talk about some splodes. Booksplode, upcoming, the first Booksplode in a very long while is going to be Planet Hulk. And then we have a Talksplode where we talk with some creators. And I'm going to be talking to Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becko about their upcoming run on Star Wars Legacy over at Dark Horse. So stay tuned for those.
Excellent.
So you can go
explodes.
To I, this explodes. You can get those over at ifanboy.com where you can read Connor's Pick of the Week review and you can check out all the other comic book stuff. You almost got me. you almost got me on our website that is written occasionally by people when they decide to. Anyway, you can go to ifanboy.com/. We'll fill in. Fine. It's not like we got anything else going on. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the people who sometimes write for the site. And there's social networking links. And then you can go to twitter.com/ifanboy to follow what's going on as we release it. Or the same thing could be said of facebook.com/ifanboy as well.
You can.
It's about honoring your commitments.
As I said earlier, I thought you were going to mention the book of the month, which I'm glad you didn't. You can go to ifanboy. I don't even know where I am anymore. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, as I said before. You can call our voicemail line 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697 with any comments, questions, concerns. Or marriage proposals. Paul's the new guy. He's single. So
I am single, yes.
We'll take all comers for Paul.
Hey.
No, we won't. if you dig us.
Guidelines.
There's a rubric. If you dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread the iFanboy word. If you find yourself in one of those drive-through banks that have those pneumatic tube systems that you put your stuff in, put a little, I don't know, put a little USB thumb drive or something in there, a dongle.
Nice.
If you're in the UK, put that in a pneumatic tube and then put it up there, and they'll throw it away, probably.
What the hell is this crap?
I think any modern office should have pneumatic tubes.
I do too. I think they're neat.
It's a lot of suckage damage possibility there. It's bad for insurance.
Maybe. All right. Well, I think until next week when Paul is going to watch E.T. and he can report back to everybody. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Probably not going to watch Starman.
It's a great movie.
You say that about a lot of movies.
Paul, back me up.
I feel bad that I ruined it for you.
Is it good or not?
I'm not kidding. I really did completely fade out. I don't know what you said.
Paul's
it's good. It's better than K-Pax.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.